So yes, we're coming to the end of what's been quite a long series, looking at the central Buddhist teaching of the Four Noble Truths and Noble Eightfold Path. We've been following really the outline of a book by Sangharakshita called Vision and Transformation, which I'd very much recommend to you if you're interested in doing some more background reading on this subject. And Sangharakshita, in that book, he presents the Noble Eightfold Path in terms of the path of vision and the path of transformation. So we've been seeing that the path begins with the stage of what's known as perfect vision, which is a kind of intuitive sense or a glimpse of the possibility of a higher dimension to life. And that the path of transformation, the other seven stages of the path, really, so represent a process of transformation through which we transform all the various different aspects of our lives so they come more and more into alignment with that spiritual vision, that vision of a higher possibility, a higher state of growth and development. So we've been looking at the seven stages of the path of transformation. So we've been looking at perfect emotion, perfect speech, perfect action, perfect livelihood, perfect effort, and perfect awareness. And now we come to really the final stage of the path, which is perfect samadhi. And I'm going to say a little bit about this term, samadhi. So, as Amarapushpa mentioned last week, samadhi, the word samadhi, which is a Pali and Sanskrit word, is used in two different senses. First of all, you could say samadhi with a small s, which means something like concentration or mental stability. So samadhi really means the ability to keep our mind steadily focused on just one thing, one aspect of our experience, rather than jumping from one thing to another. And it's sometimes used, sometimes the word samadhi is just used in a general way to mean just meditation. So sort of focus, concentration, mental stability, all of those kind of qualities that are sort of the basic building block of meditation practice. You know, when we first come to a meditation class, you know, the first instruction is, well, just come back to the breath. Just stay with the breathing as long as you can. Notice when your mind wanders off, bring it back. So in a way, the path really starts with, you know, basic teaching around samadhi, learning to focus our minds, to work against the natural tendency of our minds just to jump from one thought to another in an associative way. But then there's another meaning, a sort of higher meaning of the term samadhi, or a higher level of samadhi, which equates to what we're talking about here, perfect samadhi, which means something like the experience of being totally and consistently absorbed in the nature of reality. So, and this level of samadhi is really, it's the same as enlightenment itself. It means going beyond all the kind of negative, habitual, conditioned patterns of the mind, and just being able to rest constantly in the nature of reality, or as in some traditions it's put, to rest in the nature of mind itself. And Sangharakshita says that samadhi, in this sense, is very difficult to say anything about it. In a way, all one can do really is to sort of point towards it, or to use metaphors or ways of speaking that give us some sense of what that the state of perfect samadhi might be like. So perfect samadhi is a lot more than just being concentrated. A lot more than just being focused. It means being totally absorbed, as they say, in the nature of reality itself. And it marks the culmination or goal of the Eightfold Path. When we've sort of perfected all the other stages of the Eightfold Path, then we can come to this stage of perfect samadhi. And I thought one of the ways of approaching the subject of perfect samadhi is by taking us through a kind of map of the, you might call the journey of meditation or the path of meditation, which leads from, you know, our usual mundane, rather unsatisfactory mental states, sort of right up to this very lofty, very kind of exalted state of perfect samadhi. And hopefully by looking at this sort of map of the path, we'll get some sort of sense of how we approach this this state of samadhi. So here's the audio visual. Actually, it's not audio, is it? It's just a visual. The path of meditation. Can everyone see this? At least a bit. So you can imagine a path, a winding track going up the side of a mountain, perhaps beginning in a dark forest. The dark forest being our usual mental states. As I say, our usual mental states really very much conditioned by deep habitual patterns. You could say reactive patterns. So in our normal day-to-day lives, our minds work more or less on a kind of automatic pilot. We don't usually think in a very sort of creative or systematic way. Our minds just kind of throw up thoughts in a rather kind of uncontrolled way. And, you know, in our normal mental states, you could say we're dominated by what are known as the five hindrances. And if you've done meditation for any length of time, you'll be very familiar with these five hindrances. So we've got the first two main hindrances are craving and aversion. So, you know, the tendency of the mind to hanker after something, not to be able to settle into the present moment, but to constantly sort of go out to seek objects of desire and satisfaction. And then we have the equally strong hindrance of aversion, you know, the tendency that we have to not want difficult experience, the tendency we have to close down to experiences that we don't want to be having, and all the patterns of tension and reactivity and irritability that gives rise to. And I'm sure we've all had experience of that. If you think of the Northern Line on a Monday morning and what happens to your body and your mental state, the chances are you'll have some hint of what aversion is about. And then on top of that, as if that weren't bad enough, we have three other hindrances. We have sloth and torpor, which is when we find it difficult to focus on anything because we're just too sort of foggy and low in energy. We have restlessness and anxiety, which is, in a way, the opposite problem, where we can't sit still for a moment, where you know, our minds are sort of bouncing off the ceiling and we're sort of fidgeting and unable to stay still. And then we have a fifth one, doubt and indecision, where, in a way, we're just constantly undermined by a sort of nagging sense of low self-esteem, or a nagging sense that kind of nothing's really worth bothering about. And we can often find ourselves in this sort of slightly deflated state of doubt and indecision. So those are the traditional five hindrances. And, you know, a lot of the time when we're meditating, we're having to work with those five hindrances. We notice them coming up. We try and apply antidotes to them. We try and keep with the meditation practice. And hopefully if we stick with it and can work consistently and creatively enough, at a certain point in our meditation practice, those hindrances will start to die down. And we enter a state that's sometimes known as access concentration. And I'm sure this state is sort of quite familiar to many of us. You know, that you know, at some point in our meditation practice, in a way, the mental noise starts to kind of die down, and we start to feel a lot calmer and a lot clearer, and we start to feel like all of our energies are sort of being drawn together, and we just have a sense that we're sort of on the right track with our practice. There's a sort of natural sense of well-being that we start to tap into once we start getting a little bit more integrated, a little bit more concentrated. And one of the things about this stage of excess concentration, and again, I'm sure you have some experience of this, is that at this point, our focus tends to shift a little bit from being preoccupied with the content of our experience to having more of a sense of kind of awareness itself. I don't know whether this rings any bells to you, but once we start to get a bit more focused, we actually start to experience the qualities of awareness. So that rather than being preoccupied with whatever we're thinking about, we're sort of aware of experiencing. We're aware, if you like, of the space in which all of our experiences arise and pass away. And this, I think this being aware of, if you like, being aware of awareness, being more in touch with the nature of our own minds, our own nature of our own consciousness, is the kind of doorway which leads into the sort of higher states or the further stages of meditation. Sort of everything else kind of grows out of that sort of basic experience of being a bit more focused, being a bit more in touch with our experience, a bit more in touch with, you can say, the nature of awareness itself. And so so the traditional spiral path kind of grows out of this this experience of sort of basic samadhi. I mean, I think this basic samadhi is something that, you know, is quite easily available to most of us if we've been meditating for a while. We all have some sort of taste of it, if you like. And so when we have that experience, it sort of gives rise to, you know, some degree of faith, shraddha. And, you know, the word shraddha means sort of trust, confidence, faith. We start to feel, oh yeah, maybe there is something to this meditation. You know, maybe I can make progress on the path. Maybe, you know, I'm not a hopeless case. And that has the sort of flavour of faith or confidence. And in a way, we, you know, out of that, we sort of learn to, well, to trust the path of practice a bit more. We get to be able to sort of put ourselves a bit more wholeheartedly into the practice that we're doing. And in dependence on that experience of faith, arises gladness. I mean, one of the suttas, the Buddha says, you know, you don't have to make an effort to transition from one stage of this path to the other. One stage just grows quite naturally out of the other. So if you have this strong sense of, well, of sort of focus and concentration, you have the sense of a growing sense of confidence in the practice, then naturally a sense of sort of gladness will arise out of that. I'll give you the Pali terms for each of these, because this is a very sort of traditional list, and you'll find it, you'll come across it in text. So faith is shraddha, and gladness is pamoja. So you have a sense of gladness, of sort of basic happiness, well-being, that starts to grow out of this faith that grows out of the experience of concentration. And then as we stay with that experience of gladness, it intensifies, it becomes more intense, it becomes more focused, and it grows into what's known traditionally as piti, or rapture. And the quality of rapture is of energy moving very quickly, energy sort of welling up. So, I mean, if you've been on longer retreats, you may have had the experience of sort of feelings of energy release. You know, very often people's faces start to feel very warm, or they'll feel a sudden rush of kind of blissful energy moving through the body, or you'll feel your body warming up. And this is the experience, or the beginnings of this experience of piti or rapture. So it's quite a sort of physical, quite sort of energetic experience, this rapture. And it's associated with what's known as the first and second dhyana. I mean, in the tradition, they talk about these stages called the dhyanas, which are like sort of phases of concentration that the meditator moves through. Each dhyana being slightly more refined and subtle than the one that went before. And at this stage in the path, you know, Sangharakshita talks about what's known as samapatis, which are sort of meditation experiences. So as your mind starts to become more concentrated, as your energies become more focused, then you can have all sorts of different what sort of mental experiences arising out of meditation? So some people experience light, you know, visions of lights or colours, or visions, visionary landscapes or figures that appear, or sometimes sort of flashes of insight when one feels a sudden moment of kind of understanding something in a way that one never has before. All of these experiences can happen as the mind, as our minds become more focused. And as we move through these stages of the dhyanas, and the tradition enumerates 8 dhyanas, these sort of 8 different stages of concentration that one can move through. Out of this experience of rapture, I think after a while, you know, I guess when meditators first get into rapture, it's all very exciting and wonderful. But then after a certain time, that experience just starts to become a bit sort of crude, and you get a bit bored of rapture. So you move on to tranquility. So there's a process of calming down. You know, the lower dhyanas are much, the first and second dhyanas are much more joy and rapture and bliss and so on, and the higher dhyanas become calmer and calmer and more sort of refined. It's as though in a way you're sort of you're moving into sort of calmer and stiller, quieter, more refined states of consciousness through these higher dhyanas. So in dependence on rapture arises tranquility, which is known as pasadena. And then in dependence on tranquility arises a state of happiness or bliss. The Pali word is sukha, which I suppose means bliss. It means a very, very deep, very, very settled, very, very stable sense of happiness and well-being. That's very much associated with equanimity, with the ability to, you know, contemplate the whole range of experience with a kind of deep sense of, well, a deep sense of okayness, I suppose you could say. So this is a state of happiness and bliss, sukha. And then this independence on this level of sukha arises samadhi, which is really what we're talking about now, which is, you could say, we've got samadhi here in the sense of ordinary access concentration. And then we have samadhi again here, more in the sense of perfect samadhi, more in the sense of complete absorption in, well, in the nature of mind, in the nature of reality itself. And again, at this point, it becomes very difficult to say what that experience is or to sort of describe it. But we've got some, I thought I'd read you a section from Sangharakshita's book. Because traditionally, this this quality of samadhi is described in terms of 3 different samadhis. And the 3 different samadhis, in a sense, they all draw out some aspect or some element of the central experience of perfect samadhi. So the 3 samadhis are known as the imageless samadhi, the directionless samadhi, and the samadhi of voidness. So we're getting into quite sort of esoteric territory here, I could say. So the first of these 3 samadhis, I'm reading from Sangharakshita's book now. The first of these 3 samadhis is known as the imageless, Pali and Sanskrit, animitta. It indicates perfect freedom of the state of samadhi from all thoughts, all conceptualization. If we can imagine a state in which we are fully and clearly conscious, fully and clearly aware at the highest possible level, but without any discursive thought. If we imagine the mind as being like a beautiful, bright, blue, clear sky, without even a speck of cloud, this is what the experience of the imageless samadhi would be like. Usually, of course, the sky of the mind is full of clouds, grey clouds, black clouds, sometimes even storm clouds. But occasionally clouds tinged with gold. The state of samadhi is a state completely free from all clouds, of all thought, all conceptualization. So at this stage, in a way, we've moved beyond all conceptual thinking. And this is the imageless samadhi. Second samadhi is known as the directionless samadhi. The second samadhi, or aspect or dimension of samadhi, is known as the directionless or unbiased, Sanskrit apranahita. The directionless samadhi is a state in which there's no particular direction in which one wants to go. There is no sense of preference. One just remains poised like a sphere resting on a completely horizontal plane, with no reason why it should roll in any particular direction. The enlightened mind, the mind established in samadhi, is like this. It has no tendency or inclination to go in any one direction because it has no individual or egotistical desire. This is a difficult state to describe, but perhaps if one thinks in terms of a perfect spontaneity, without any urge or impulse to do anything in particular, one may get somewhere near it. This is the directionless samadhi. In a sense, you could say the imageless samadhi is going beyond all conceptual thought. The directionless samadhi is going beyond all kind of egotistical desires. And thirdly, the samadhi of voidness. The third aspect or dimension of samadhi is known as the samadhi of voidness, or shunyata. Shunyata does not really mean emptiness or voidness in a literal sense. It means reality. Shunyata samadhi is the state of full and complete realization of the ultimate nature of existence, which cannot be put into words. It is not just a glimpse, as at the stage of perfect vision, but a full, total, and perfect realization. This samadhi of voidness is connected in some texts with the ekalakshana samadhi, or the samadhi of one characteristic, also known as the samadhi of same or even-mindedness. This is an experience where one sees everything as having the same characteristics. We normally see things as good or bad, some things we regard as pleasant, some as unpleasant, some things we like, some we dislike, some are near, some are far, some are past, some are present, and some are future. In this way, we assign different characteristics to things. But in the samadhi of voidness, you see everything as having the same characteristic. It is all shunyata, all ultimately real, and in its ultimate depths, all the same. Inasmuch as everything is basically the same, there is no reason why one should have different attitudes towards different things. One has the same attitude towards everything, and enjoys therefore a state of perfect peace, tranquility, stability, and rest. So those quite interesting, isn't it? You know, you say those three samadhis actually almost like give you three different glimpses or three different angles or aspects on the same experience of complete samadhi. And so yeah, this is the stage of perfect samadhi, the stage where, you know, our whole being and whole consciousness, having been brought into line with this quality of perfect vision, have been completely transformed. It's also the state of enlightenment or Buddhahood. Perfect samadhi and perfect wisdom are said to be the same. So in a way, when one's kind of fully concentrated, one sees directly into the nature of how things really are. And in the traditional scheme of the spiral path, there are several stages that come after this perfect samadhi, but it's knowledge and vision of how things really are, and then knowledge and vision of liberation. So, you know, these two final stages which lead to full and perfect enlightenment itself. So I just thought that's a way of kind of explaining, in a way sort of showing how concentration or samadhi is kind of there right at the beginning of the path. In a way, it's the kind of gate that leads into all the sort of higher stages of the path. And it's there kind of at the end of the path as the kind of final culmination of the path of meditation. I really like sort of sharing this stuff because it gives me a real sense of, you know, where it's quite inspiring to have a sense of, you know, where meditation can take you. Mm. You know, we tend to think about meditation very much in terms of, you know, developing calm, developing positivity, developing sort of psychological wholeness and kind of balance. And in a way, we can very much approach meditation in that way, and it works very much in that way. But in a way, there's a lot more to it. It can open out into much greater depths, much greater perspectives. So I was thinking, well, how can we relate to this? And it does seem so, because the problem we have with this is it seems so far away from our present experience, doesn't it? You know, most of us are kind of, you know, mostly down here, you know. And like, so we look up at this kind of, you know, amazing peak and we go, kind of, wow, that's great. But, you know, how can we sort of approach this? And I suppose I was thinking, well, you know, we can try to reflect on these qualities of the imageless, the directionless, and the voidness samadhis, and try and find kind of equivalents for those in our kind of ordinary meditation experience. So, I guess the imageless samadhi. I guess we can look for, you know, a quality of sort of brightness or clarity in our experience. So maybe if we're somewhere here, we're just starting to experience a little bit of focus, a little bit of concentration. Well, then we can start to look in the spaces between our thoughts, look in the spaces between our experience, and try and find this kind of sky-like quality there, somewhere in between our experience. So if our experience is like clouds, we just look for the little gaps in between the clouds and just look for that quality of sort of clarity and spaciousness in that. And then I guess, you know, for the directionless samadhi, you know, as we start to become a little bit more focused and concentrated, perhaps we can start to look for, you know, a quality of, well, emotional openness. In our experience, you know, we may notice that our usual kind of emotional pushes and pulls start to kind of smooth out a bit. We do feel more of a sense of kind of just emotional expansiveness, you know, that just comes quite naturally into our experience. You know, it becomes easier to do the final stage of the metta bhavana because our hearts already feel a bit sort of open, a bit sort of sensitized to our own experience and to what's going on around us. So we can look for this quality of open-heartedness in our experience. And I guess with the samadhi of voidness, we can look for a quality of openness in our experience. You know, we can look for a sense of our minds becoming more sort of spacious and open. Some traditions, they talk about the nature of mind having the qualities of openness, clarity, and sensitivity. And the nice thing about those definitions is, well, they point to these qualities of the enlightened mind, but also we have a bit of them. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a bit of them in our own ordinary, everyday experience. We can always look for a quality of openness in our experience somehow. We can always look for a quality of clarity around the way that we're experiencing things. So we can always look for this quality of emotional receptivity, kind of emotional openness. So, and hopefully, you know, looking at those qualities kind of give us a way to start to approach this you know, really very high spiritual ideal of perfect samadhi. So I thought we could finish off by doing a sort of short sort of meditation and reflection using kind of three traditional images which are often given in Tibetan and in Zen tradition, I believe, of body like a mountain, heart like an ocean, mind like a sky. And in a way, these images point to qualities of experience, they point to qualities of the mind. And hopefully, by reflecting on those images, we can start to touch in some of these qualities of samadhi. So, if you'd like to find a comfortable comfortable position for meditation. And, so we start with this image of body like a mountain. So like feeling our bodies in contact with the ground, very firmly connected to the earth. Feeling our spines rising up, and the movement of the breath in the body. As we connect a body like a mountain, we can connect to an aspect of our experience which is very stable, very grounded, very steady. This is a mountain stays steady and solid through even the most violent storms. In the same way, there's some aspect of our awareness that can remain steady and calm through all the difficulties, all the ups and downs of our day-to-day life. And then we look for this quality of heart like the ocean. Perhaps connecting to our heart centers. This image of the ocean which holds all the different sea creatures within it. In the same way, our hearts can hold all living beings. Looking for this quality of openness, expansiveness. really connecting to the natural sensitivity of our awareness, the natural alive, responsive quality that's always there somehow behind our experience. And then finally we connect to the quality of mind like the sky. We can imagine our awareness as this clear sky stretching in every direction to infinity. Completely clear, completely pure, completely undisturbed. Just staying with these qualities, body like a mountain, stable, unshakable, heart like the ocean, open, warm, expansive, sensitive, mind like the sky, vast and open, undisturbed. And we can reflect that these qualities of body like a mountain, heart like the ocean, mind like the sky, are actually pointing us towards what the experience of enlightenment might be like. What it would be like to inhabit that quality of experience all the time. In a minute we'll bring this reflection and meditation to an end, but just before we do, just coming back to an ordinary sense of yourself. I don't want to leave you hanging in the clear blue sky. I want you to come back and just reconnect with your legs and your feet and the cushion and the movement of your breathing. Just taking a moment to notice how you're feeling in your body and in your emotions. We'll bring this meditation and reflection to an end.